Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable to thee, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. Today is Transfiguration Sunday, the last Sunday in Epiphany. Often Episcopalians feel guilty for not knowing the Bible as well as we think we should. But Transfiguration Sunday comes around every year. Hopefully we've been exposed to this Sunday in the lectionary enough that we know the story as an anchor for the end of one season, Epiphany, and the beginning of a new season, Lent. It seems appropriate that this ending of one season and the beginning of a new season would be called Transfiguration, the transforming of where we are with the excitement of what comes next. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John and led them up on a high mountain. Jesus took 3 apostles with him, his inner circle, his best friends, if you will, up the mountain with him. He was transfigured before them, and his garments became glistening. A change came over him, some say a change from the inside out. Transfiguration Sunday is one of the 5 major milestones in the life of Jesus, which include baptism, crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension. It was one of the miracles of Jesus in the Gospels. The miracle was unique among others, and then the miracle happened to Jesus. Jesus was transfigured and became radiant. In Christian teaching, the transformation is a pivotal moment, and the setting on the mountain is presented as the point where human nature meets God, with Jesus as the connecting point, acting as a bridge between heaven and earth. A mountain was often associated with closeness to God and readiness to receive his word. The transfiguration was a special attempt of God to cure spiritual blindness of these chief disciples, Peter, James, and John. They were the 3 disciples who witnessed the healing of Jairus' daughter and would witness the agony of Gethsemane. When Peter, James, and John witnessed Jesus' garments becoming radiant, they were in a state of fear and confusion. These disciples had not demonstrated exceptional insight and fidelity, as we know. It was Peter that Jesus rebuked for his attempt to turn him away from God's will. And James and John showed themselves preoccupied with greatness rather than service. All 3 failed to watch Jesus during the agony in the garden. And Peter experienced fear from this radiant change. And of course, he wanted to build 3 booths. He wanted to do something. Peter's desire to extend that moment by building 3 booths represents an attempt to rest in the glory without following the way of the cross. Suddenly, Moses and Elijah appear on the scene, and we know the story of Moses so well. God calls Moses up on a mountain. He will give him tables of stone, our 10 commandments. A cloud covers the mountain. And when Moses comes down from the mountain, his face was shining. He was radiant from being in God's presence. In 2 Kings, we have the story of Elijah, who was about to be taken up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgad to Bethel to Jericho to Jordan. Elijah had encouraged Elisha to stay behind, but Elisha, desiring to be a true disciple, declared he would never leave Elijah. In fact, Elisha slaughtered his 12 oxen, his livelihood, and gave the meat as a feast to the people. Sometime later, a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated Elijah and Elisha, and Elijah ascended into the whirlwind. When Moses and Elijah were removed from the scene to leave only Jesus, the disciples were shown that in Jerusalem, the Old Testament law and the prophets were fulfilled. The transfiguration revealed Jesus' divine nature. Radiance was the foretaste of Christ's glory. His disciples, strengthened in their faith, heard the voice from the cloud declare, "This is my son, my beloved. Listen to him." God's voice exalted Jesus above Moses and Elijah as the long-awaited Messiah. Lent can be a climbing up a mountain. The Lenten journey may be an experience out of comfort, complacency, and self-importance. What you give up or add to your life, you may need or want a few close friends along with you. Actually, I pray you take a few close friends with you this Lent. They will be like Peter, James, and John, not perfect, but the ones who have earned the right to journey with you. They are the ones who can stay out of judgment and allow you to communicate your feelings, to unearthen the barriers between you and God. They are the ones who will demonstrate empathy as you journey through Lent. They are the ones who will remind you that when you talk to God, your appearance changes. Many of us believed we are flawed and unworthy of love and belonging. As we uncover those barriers that keep us from deepening our relationship with God and others, Jesus shows us where to go and what to do. Instead of running from God this Lent, let's be brave and run right to him. We can take our vulnerabilities, our pain and sorrow, our darkness, and allow our Father to say, "This is my son, my daughter, my beloved, whom I love," and he will make that radiant change in our lives. I have a friend named Suzanne, and I got permission to tell this story, who told me a story about a time when she was drowning in debt, experiencing a betrayal in a relationship with a man that she really loved, and questioning herself. She was in professional training, and one of the exercises was to turn her life around was to randomly give to a perfect stranger once a week to witness what would happen. Suzanne said that in a time when she was consumed with her financial challenges, she decided to give $100 away every week to a perfect stranger on the street. She wasn't sure how to identify this person, but she knew that God would give her guidance. During the week, she was aware of the people around her, looking for that person who would receive the gift. The first person she saw happened to be a woman walking away from a bus stop. She got out of her car, got her $100 in her hand, and walked up to her. She said, "I'd like you to receive this money today." The woman was gracious and thanked her for the gift. My friend said that this woman's face changed right before her eyes. The next week, she was walking down the street and she saw a woman and wanted to give her some money. But by the time she got her car stopped and the money out of her purse, the woman was gone. This woman was preoccupied on her cell phone. Suzanne looked around and there was a man standing next to his BMW. She walked up to him and said, "Please receive this today." At first, he rejected her offer. But then she looked at him in the eyes and said, "Please receive this. It's yours." He shrugged his shoulders and took the money and said, "Thank you." Suzanne walked just down the street to a store, and on the shelf there were three plates that said, "Dream, Believe, and Receive." And at that moment, the anxiety and the betrayal over that broken relationship lifted from her. The third week, Suzanne was in a restaurant and was inspired to give the money away. So there was a young man standing against the wall, and he was on his cell phone. She said he appeared to be distressed, so she wanted to give him the money. She went up to him and said, "Please receive this gift. It's yours." He got really angry. She walked away, and he chased her out of the restaurant. She turned around and looked at him in the eyes and said, "Please receive it. It's yours." He did, but with resignation. One of the lessons that Suzanne said that she learned from this exercise was, what if this was God here to give me a gift, and I'm too preoccupied, too angry, or too resistant to receive it? What a difference it was from the woman who received the gift graciously to the man who received it with resistance. You and I also have an opportunity coming up this next weekend to be together on our faith journey. Faith Alive is a time for fellowship, a time to deepen our walk in Christ with one another, a time to have fun. Faith Alive is an opportunity for spiritual transformation and renewal. There may be some of us who fear, maybe have some fear or confusion about what will take place on this weekend, but we will not be asked to say or do anything uncomfortable. The purpose is simply to help us to evaluate where we are and where we want to journey, which mountain we want to climb on our spiritual journeys. Peter, James, and John became pillars of the Jerusalem church. They were a part of redeeming humanity. Most of us want a mountaintop experience to encounter transformation with Jesus Christ, yet we know we have to come back down to everyday life. So perhaps the question is, how do we as a faith community receive an experience of God on the mountaintop and become a part of redeeming humanity? How do we in our faith community create a safe place for members and seekers to explore various ways of being transformed, where we become a part of radiant change, illuminating our spiritual journeys? Peter, James, and John were able to receive the gift, to be brave, vulnerable to the path of their lives with Jesus Christ. We have an opportunity, if we choose to take it. As I wrote this, I sounded a little bit like Peter Graves in Mission Impossible. Here's your mission, should you choose to accept it. We are stepping into Lent, beginning with Ash Wednesday. Lent is a time when we choose to add something to our daily routine or take something away from it. Whatever you do, please remember that you are God's beloved son or daughter, God's beloved child, who God is calling to be a part of radiant change. Jesus' invitation remains the same, to accept the gift of transformation and follow him. In his fanciful theological ABCs book, Whistling in the Dark, Frederick Buechner, author and Presbyterian minister, muses on the Transfiguration this way. In the Transfiguration, it was the holiness of Jesus shining through his humanness, his face so alive with it that they were almost blinded. Even with us, something like that happens once in a while. The face of a man walking his child into a park. A woman picking peas in her garden. Of someone, even the unlikeliest person, listening to a concert. Or standing barefoot in the sand, watching the waves roll in. Or just having a beer at a Saturday baseball game in July. Every once and so often, something so touching, so alive, transfigures the human face that it's almost beyond bearing. It seems appropriate to end with Martin Luther King's last sermon that he delivered on April the 3rd in 1968, the eve of his assassination. He concluded his remarks that night with this. I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up on the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. And I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fretting or fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. I pray in this Lenten season, you and I will see the glory of the Lord. I pray each one of us will climb our spiritual mountain to be transformed by God, experience radiant change, readying us for what comes next.